Greetings from Vrindavan. And we will start with Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 21. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishnasya Vasudevaya. Devaki Nandanaya cha. Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. Govindaya Namo Namah. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord who has become the son of Vasudeva, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other coward men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. Purport, the Lord being thus unapproachable by any material assets and of unbounded and causeless mercy descends to the earth as he is in order to show his special mercy upon his unalloyed devotees and to diminish the upsurges of the demoniac persons. Queen Kunti specifically adores the incarnation or descent of Lord Krishna above all other incarnations, because in this particular incarnation, he is more approachable. In the Rama incarnation, he remained a king's son from his very childhood. But in the incarnation of Krishna, although he was the son of a king, he at once left the shelter of his real father and mother, King Vasudeva and Queen Devaki, just after his appearance, and went to the lap of Yasodamayi to play the part of an ordinary cowherd boy in the blessed Vrajabhumi, which is very sanctified because of his childhood pastimes. Therefore, Lord Krishna is more merciful than Lord Ram. He was undoubtedly very kind to Kunti's brother, Vasudev, and the family. Had he not become the son of Vasudev and Devaki, Queen Kunti could not claim him to be her nephew and thus address Krishna in parental affection. But Nanda and Yasoda are more fortunate because they could relish the Lord's childhood pastimes, which were more attractive than all other pastimes. There is no parallel to his childhood pastimes as exhibited at Vrajabhumi, which are replicas of his eternal affairs in the original Krishna Loka, described as Chintamani Dham in the Brahma Samhita. Lord Sri Krishna descended himself at Vrajabhumi with all his transcendental entourage and paraphernalia. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confirmed that no one is as fortunate as the residents of Vrajabhumi, and specifically the cowherd girls who dedicated their everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. His pastimes with Nanda and Yasoda and his pastimes with the cowherd men, and especially with the cowherd boys and the cows, have caused him to be known as Govinda. Lord Krishna as Govinda is more inclined to the Brahmins and the cows, indicating thereby that human prosperity depends more on these two items, namely Brahminical culture and cow protection. Lord Krishna is never satisfied when these two are lacking. One second. I'm still learning to use this Kindle. So there's some technically. I hope I can get right to the point today, just a little background. I'm in Vrindavan. And I hit the ground running, so to speak. That's a phrase that's used when you arrive at a place, and before you settle in, you begin your work. So my seva here, and I see how important it is, and I mentioned many times how bhakti means to make oneself available. And my service here is to be available for the people that are visiting. And so many groups at once. But, you know, that opportunity, Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, that souls, since time immemorial, are wandering the universe, and they have a chance to come to Vrindavan and get the Bhakti Lata Bij, which is that direct connection and experience with God, that happiness and joy that awakens people that there's actually a goal in life, there's a goal in life that has everything to do with our connection in God, who gives that transcendental happiness and awakens the soul, the consciousness of the soul, which is so almost obviously meant for that feeling of service, love, and compassion to the deepest degree. So we had people from Colombia and then Raghunath's group. Today I was out all day. So that's what's going on here. And I'll spend two more days here or three more days here, and then we'll go to Govardhan. I was looking at my greetings from Vrindavan beginning almost 20 years ago about entering into Vrindavan and what that means. So let's just put this in brief context. The first canto is the history of the Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami is satisfying the inquiries of the sages of Namasharanya about the three main conduits of the Bhagavatam, because he wanted to hear about Vyasadeva, who taught it to his son Sukadeva, who taught it to Maharaj Prickett. And the first canto basically is Sutta answering their questions. Because if you understand, Sutta Goswami told the sages of Namasharanya that he was there when the Bhagavatam was spoken and he was going to relate it to them. So if the person who was there is relating to it, then when he's relating the Bhagavatam to the sages of Namasharanya, that must be a contemporary event. And they must have some basic awareness of it that inspired them ask them to Sutta Goswami to elaborate on the history of how this was delineated. And now we're in the section beginning in the seventh chapter where he begins to tell about Maharaj Prickett. And he wanted to know about his birth, his life, and his death. Because this is very, very extraordinary that one is perfect in all aspects. I think our hope is maybe at death, our births were imperfect, our lives have been a mess. Speaking myself. And hopefully the impetus of the complete destruction of the false ego and our acquiescence to that fact and our acceptance of that fact as mercy will enable us finally to get over the false ego by accepting wholeheartedly Krishna's will as absolute. And accepting that, destroying the false ego and destroying the subtle connection the soul has to this particular body and the conception of enjoyer and controller separate from God. So he first begins to tell about Maharaj Prickett's birth And I've made this point many, many times, and I think it's very, very significant, is that the first time that Krishna appears in our two main books about Krishna, the book written by Krishna, which is the Bhagavad Gita, and the book about the Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam, in both places we encounter Krishna in the same place. And I think that is very significant. He's the driver of Arjuna. And what does the driver mean? It means when Arjuna gets off the chariot, Krishna is there to, as a humble servant, to hold his hand out so Arjuna can step in the chariot. It means that he unbridles the horses. He takes them out to feed them. Krishna is brushing the horses. So what does that mean? That the first place we see Krishna is not in a position, of majesty or opulence. I think it's to stress that the supremacy of God, Krishna, the supremacy of Krishna, the supremacy of any person is his personality, not his position. We say that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And so we see Krishna, and because the story is about the birth of Maharaj Prickett, but the birth of Maharaj Prickett introduces Krishna, who saves him in the womb, because this is the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna is about to leave. But the son of the opposing general, Dronacharya, Dronacharya was a teacher of military science. He was a teacher of Arjuna, in fact. But he's on the opposing side. He dies in the battlefield. His son tries to take revenge, and he launches a Brahmastra weapon, an atomic weapon that's a smart, directed weapon to the womb. Krishna appears in the womb, protects Maharaj Prickett, the last remaining descendant of the Kuru dynasty, and then he's about to leave. And in his leaving, we're introduced to the relationships that the devotees have with Krishna. And this is really what the Bhagavatam's about. The Bhagavatam's about inspiring in us to love Krishna. And love is manifest in relationship. So we're inspired in relationship with Krishna by seeing Krishna as the object of love, and to see the devotees as the subject of love. We want to become the subjects of love, but we have to become inspired by the object of love. And we also have to become inspired by the subject of love. We have to become inspired by God as the object of our devotion. We have to be inspired by those devotees who love God in the relationship that we aspire for. So Krishna is about to leave, and then his aunt comes out, and she uncharacteristically begins to offer prayers. And this has been discussed in a commentary in a very interesting way. It describes intimacy to Krishna like very, very thick ghee. But within that relationship with Krishna, there's still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he's not manifesting his reverence so that he can manifest, he's not manifesting his majesty so he can manifest his heart. So the majesty is hidden within. Just like the father's majesty, his power, he's the high court judge, it's covered by the thickness of his love for his wife, his love for his children, the intimacy in that relationship where the son sees him as father, and the father sees him as child, and the mother sees him as lover. But here with Kunti, she has a parental relationship with Krishna that's so sweet that Krishna relishes the love of his father's sister. But she's just seeing the glories of God. She's just seeing how Krishna manifested. He was outside, and now he manifested in the womb and saved her grandchild, actually. Was it her grandchild, her great-grandchild? Anyway, saved Parikshit. And therefore, that view of majesty, that view of opulence, melted the intimacy, and the majesty of Krishna became temporarily manifest before her eyes. And therefore, she begins to offer prayers, which is the anubhav, the actions of reverence. She begins to now offer prayers to Krishna. Namasye Purusham Padyam. You are the original personality of Godhead. You're inside and outside of everything, and just the classic, and it's just pouring from her heart these prayers, and you're hidden like an actor on a stage. There's a person there, but you don't know the person's there because he's playing so many roles, and mudhadrik, the foolish observer, the foolish observer, one who is deha abhiman, has the conception of the body. What the conception of the body does, when we think I am the body, we think I am the controller, we think I am the enjoyer, and therefore we cannot see who is. So the foolish observer cannot see, which indicates that perception has as much to do with consciousness as it does with the senses, because the senses may observe the object, but then the object has to be assimilated by one's intelligence, which is affected by one's attitudes. And therefore, what we hear is often filtered through our conceptions or our misconceptions. So the foolish observer, he doesn't see Krishna. He doesn't see Krishna. But not only, and then she explains that Krishna has appeared to, Krishna has appeared to propagate the science of devotional service into the hearts of advanced transcendentalists. He's come for advanced transcendentalists. So what does that mean? If he's come for advanced transcendentalists, it means that advanced transcendentalists cannot also understand Krishna. Those who are expert in discriminating, this is such a simple point in one sense, that you can't understand a person by analysis. You may study the history of a person, but you'll never know the person unless you love him. So she's saying, you've come. And of course, Krishna propagates because those people understand they're not the body. So when they come to Krishna, they're not going to ask anything in return. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says of those who come to Krishna, the Gyani is the best. Because if he comes to Krishna, He's already detached from the body, so he'll come in the platform of pure love. But what Kunti is saying here is that you come to propagate it to these people who know how to discriminate matter and spirit, meaning that these people don't understand Krishna, because they don't love Krishna. And if you don't love someone, they will not give themselves to you. Simple point. The essence of bhakti. That if you want to understand God, God has to be inspired to give himself to you. And therefore, God has to see your love. And how does God see your love? By service. Therefore, Prabhupada always defined bhakti as not just devotion, a feeling, but devotional service. The feeling is expressed, otherwise the feeling is not there. That's love. It either has to be expressed in thoughts, it either has to be expressed in words, or it has to be expressed in actions. But if the service is not there, the love is not there. So our love is expressed, and that's called seva. Seva is the expression of love being inspired by the object of love. So she's saying, how can you come for these people? And why does Krishna come for these people? Because if you can convince these people, you can convince anyone. And if you can convince these people are already the people who are influential in society. In a proper culture, these are the people who are on the top of society. These are the Brahmins and sannyasi. These are the gurus of all other vanas and ashrams. So if you can make them devotees, then the whole society will become influenced. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya, in his preaching, who did he preach to? Who did he spend that personal time with? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, an impersonalist. How influential he was. He was the chief logician in India. And he converted him. And Prakasananda Saraswati, the chief Mayavadi, he converted him. And in general, that was his tact. That's why Prabhupada started the Bhaktivedanta Institute and put so much effort into the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Because he saw that people were accepting the scientists as the Brahmins of society, those who represent the truth in society. So Prabhupada had that vision of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Because if you can propagate Krishna consciousness among them, then the whole society can be influenced. And then when Kunti is thinking like this, she says, then how can us women know you? Meaning that Prabhupada in the purport, on that purport, discusses that women have a more highly developed, in general, empathetic nature that makes it suitable for bhakti. So even though she's expressing her disqualification that she may not be as expert in the gyanic path of austerity and renunciation and discrimination, it's funny. the devotee's disqualification becomes his qualification. His acknowledgement is so beautiful in bhakti. Our acknowledgement of our inability to capture God becomes our qualification to do so. Because ours is the path of mercy, and mercy is attracted by humility, which is the acknowledgement and expression of need. And that's self-realization, because we're sarvasya chaham hiti sani vishto matasmatir gyanam aponancha. Krishna says, I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So our intelligence is coming from God, and our ability to use it is coming from God, as are all our opulences. So when you get down to the root of humility, the root of reality, and we actually see how utterly dependent we are on God, no matter what opulence we have, it can fail in a minute. You can become a great speaker and become at a loss for words. You can become a great manager and make a huge mistake. You can become an athlete and fail. And it will fail, because the material nature is meant to help us develop this quality of humility and reality, that we are part of God and we're meant for his service, and we're dependent on his power and inspiration to do so. So this lack of qualification becomes our qualification, if we are recognize it. And that's why I always quote from the Bhakti Sandarbha, what Jiva Goswami said about kirtan. And it's so beautiful that devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. Therefore, Kali Yuga has an advantage. Because exhibiting our material power and competence is so difficult that it's even difficult to have one successful family in control. It's difficult to have one successful life of health in control. It's difficult to have a life of good air, of good food, of good relationships. The Kali Yuga can open our eyes on our lack of control of the world, and the admittance of that, and the dependence of that, and express in our heart through the holy name can attract God's mercy. Mercy flows to not only need, but to one who has a recognition of that need. A proud beggar who is demanding will not inspire our mercy. A humble beggar Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
We're here.
Okay, I came back on. Was I off for a while?
No.
No.
Okay, because my lights went off. Okay. Anyway, so she's feeling, I'm a simple mother. I don't have these discriminatory powers. But that simple, Prabhupada puts it beautiful, that simple acceptance of the Lord's authority, the sincerity of purpose. Krishna knows it's our sincerity, it's our desire, more than our material capabilities that attract Krishna's mercy. And in fact, those material capabilities become a obstacle to devotional service. Queen Kunti is going to pray soon about that. She's going to say, Janma Aishvar, Shruta Shribir, Edamana Madapuna, Navahat Yabidaitumbai. But that, to have this akinchana, I have nothing, I'm dependent. This feeling that we should have of the child in the lap of the loving mother, that type of love and dependence and reality of our situation, to actually have that and express that attracts God's mercy more than any material ability. And if you have the material abilities and you use it in Krishna's service, it can be a great asset. Like we may have intelligence, but it's not intelligence in the service of Krishna. Not that we feel that we can ascend to the truth. Pantastu koti satavatsara sampagamyo vayora tapi. So you can go by the speed of mind for millions and millions of years and not understand Krishna. So now what happens with Queen Kunti is very interesting in this verse. So she's saying Krishna is beyond our intellectual dominance. In the previous verse, that we have to know Krishna by his mercy. So now Kunti, in glorifying Krishna now in this verse, just offers her obeisances to him in utter submission and service. And when she does that, her intimacy in relationship now again becomes manifest. Because the service doesn't require, the service requires relationship. And if your relationship with Krishna is as a friend, the service doesn't require an understanding of Krishna's majesty. In fact, that kind of awe and reverence will be an impediment for your service. For example, a mother, her whole service, her whole love is, I am your maintainer. She doesn't require a sense of majesty, Mother Yasoda, to love Krishna in that way. In fact, when Krishna exhibits his majesty, his opulence, his position as God, it's actually a disturbance for her service. So now temporarily, Kunti was seeing Krishna's reverence, but after all, she's Krishna's aunt, and her madhurya, her intimacy. So therefore, she prays to Krishna and starts to remember his Krishna in relationship to his devotees, in terms of intimate relationship, in terms of Vrindavan. And we also have to come to that point. We have to develop the attitude of service and in the conditioned state that requires a sense of understanding of God's Aishwarya or God's opulence. But as one advances more and more in bhakti, and one realizes one's relationship with Krishna, then that sense of opulence, that sense of majesty, that sense of divinity fades more and more into the background. And our loving relationship with Krishna becomes prominent. So very progressively, she's going to remember Krishna in his intimacy with the devotees, in terms of the names of Krishna, which are an expression of that relationship. But she begins in general by saying Krishnasya, which is a very significant point, because Krish means shelter and Na means happiness. So Krishna, you put them together, and Krishna means the Lord of all happiness. And that's how we become devotees. Because somehow or other, in our sojourn in the material world, it brought us to a platform of humility where we became seekers of the truth, which is a humble position, because we're that's what a seeker means. A true seeker is not looking for knowledge to control the world. That's not spiritual. He's looking for knowledge that will make him spiritual, that make him serve the world. So purpose to one degree or another, and you come in contact with Krishna, that connection with Krishna and the energy that flows through Krishna, whether you are walking in the street, I sometimes in Times Square, being at Union Square at the Kirtan, and you see someone walking up from the subway, and you see someone walking up from the subway and opening their hearts and becoming a devotee. And then you think, well, what was happening before that? Was it their miserable job? And what was their life like, life after life, trying to be an enjoyer and controller and walking up those subway steps in a humble mood and opening their hearts? And then God appears in the form of the holy name, and it touches their heart, and that connection creates an energy. Because Krishna is the Lord of all happiness, and all happiness is love. So the Lord of all happiness is the supreme object of love. So Krishnasya. And really what Kunti is saying is, even if I, that you are giving me immense pleasure because you're the source of all happiness. Krishnasya, you're the source of all happiness. You're giving me immense pleasure. And therefore, I offer my obeisances to you. And this has to be our mood. We have touched Krishna. We have touched the hand of God. And that has given us pleasure. Somehow that was the mercy. Somehow or other, we're wandering the universe, and somehow or other, we've come in contact to God, the Lord of all happiness, Krishna. And we felt that in our hearts. And that became our goal. And therefore, I offer my obeisances to you. I was saying this morning, I was discussing with the devotees. I think it's a bit relevant because I was giving class here. How Hayagriva was in New Vrindavan, one of the first devotees, and he was dying from cancer, and his spine was like eggshells, and he was in so much pain. And Satyaraj came to visit him because Hayagriva was the first disciple of Prabhupada to actually write. And I believe he wrote this poem, Allen Ginsberg wrote this poem, Howl, and Hayagriva wrote this poem, Chant. He was really the first person to write. And he was on his deathbed and he saw Satyaraj, who's also a writer, and he began to reflect on his life, how fallen he was, how he could maintain the principles of Krishna consciousness. And now here he was dying in New Vrindavan. And he looked at Satyaraj. He said, a 70-year-old Bengali gentleman arrives in New York to translate and publish books in English. And who is the first person he met? He's referring to himself. Who is the first person he met? An English professor. And then he looked at Satyaraj and he said, I was touched by the hand of God. So I think we all have to feel that mercy. Somehow or other, we should never minimize what we have gotten and the opportunity we've gotten to be connected to the absolute truth and be connected to people who represent that truth and actually have some ultimate knowledge and direction in life. We should all feel actually we've been touched by the hand of God. It's so fortunate. I'm watching the experience of these people who've come with Raghunath, you know, nonstop, morning to evening. It's just nonstop, but they're feeling it. And they're overwhelmed with this experience. Who has this kind of experience where by concentration and absorption over a period of time without interruption in the Dham, chanting, hearing about Krishna, going around Govardhan Hill, waking up in the morning, going to the temples, Brijbasi rotis, coming to my classes, that absorption and the feeling that can give, because bhakti, the basis of bhakti is absorption. Absorption in Krishna in his different manifestations, especially the five most potent manifestations of chanting the holy name, worshiping the deities, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees and visiting these places, especially those. And when you're absorbed in it, there's an effect. I gave an example like a magnifying glass, and there's a piece of paper and you're a young kid. You can shine the sunlight through, but it won't burn unless it's concentrated over a period of time. And that's what happens in devotional service. When it's concentrated over a period of time, that's why it's so important in our japa meditation to actually concentrate over a period of time. Even to achieve samadhi, Yoga Sutra says it never begins at samadhi, it begins at dharana and samadhi. It churns, it gets quick, it never starts at, it's like a car, it never starts in fifth gear. So she says, Krishnasya, the Lord of all happiness, Vasudevaya, by calling Krishna Vasudev, she's establishing her relationship with Krishna, because Krishna is the son of Vasudev. So it establishes her relationship, because her relationship with Krishna is based on her relationship with Krishna's father. She's the sister of Krishna's father and therefore Krishna's aunt. So she's glorifying Krishna's father. And Krishna's father, the term Vasudeva, is also the term of the consciousness that one needs to actually attract and invoke Krishna to manifest in the heart. Krishnasya Vishuddha Sattvam Vasudeva Shabditam. Vasudeva Shabditam. Vishuddha Sattva, the pure consciousness where Krishna can appear in your heart. Vasudeva Shabditam. So Krishna's father, it's such a glorious position. So she's discussing now the relationships with Krishna and bowing down and submitting and praying to enter into this intimate relationship with Krishna. And then it gets progressively more intimate. Devaki Nandanayana. And even more intimate than Krishna's father is Krishna's mother, because he was 9 months in the womb of his mother. And then Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, and unto the cowherd boys of Krishna, even more glorious, Nanda, even more glorious than Devaki, Nanda and Yasoda, because they spent time when Krishna was young. And if you have parental affection, it's most stimulated and appreciated when the child is young, because it suits the mood, the flavor of parental affection is I am your maintainer, I am your protector. And that consciousness is most pronounced when the child actually is the most dependent. So that type of love was even more. And Govindaya Namo Namaha. Krishna is Govindaya Namo Namaha. Govindaya means Govinda. He got the name at Govardhan Hill because he was the protector of the cows. But really, Govinda means one who gives pleasure to the senses and who experienced that more than the gopis. So now her full, intimate mood. Her relationship is now, she was appreciating Krishna's majesty, but now she's just submitting and surrendering in her relationship to Krishna. Anyway, we will stop now. If there are any questions, I have some time.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bogya.
Yeah, I had a couple things. One was, did I hear you correctly in saying that when Queen Kunti was relating to Krishna in terms of his majesty, that was when the intimacy of her relationship became manifest? Did you say like that, something like that?
No, the analogy that was given is that you can put like a jewel in gold and ghee, and you can't see the jewel, right? If the ghee is melted, then you see the jewel. So Krishna's opulence is covered by the intimacy of Kunti's relationship with him as his nephew. So she couldn't understand, it was actually a higher realization, but she couldn't understand his majesty. But then when she saw him enter into the womb of Uttara, and then outside of Uttara, she realized that this was God, and therefore her feelings of intimacy kind of dissipated or melted. So when the ghee melted, you can see what's inside. So she saw, Krishna's the actor, it's God playing these different parts. So she saw that now she could see that this was God. It's not that, I think the confusion with that analogy, which comes from the Shastra, it seems that something more valuable is inside than the intimacy with Krishna.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but that's the analogy mm-hmm. that we're given.
I see. Okay? I see. Yeah, just one other quick thing. You know, that that Jiva Goswami quote that you're always quoting about the
devotion in the form, devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those devoid of false prestige, and therefore, being born in the Kali Yuga.
So the word kirtan, and because normally when we hear of kirtan, we normally think of the music.
It should be devotion in the form of kirtan, not kirtan in the form of devotion. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah, we often think of music.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean that word kirtan in that quote, I just need a clarification about what is.
It's more referring to the music and the chanting of the holy name than anything else. Although kirtan can be glorifying Krishna, preaching so many things. It more refers to the chanting of the holy name, because that section was about chanting. Okay?
Well, okay, to be continued. Thank you very much.
Gail, I understand that your main kirtan is hearing the Shastra. Don't feel discouraged. Okay. Okay, anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Toto Gopinath here.
Okay, and Priya, wow, great. Okay, who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
A wonderful class, thank you.
Thank you so much. I have to get, I've been doing so much writing that my studying, I feel when I'm back in Vrindavan now and I'm going to give class every day, I'm going to be able to, the Sunday classes, I think I'll be able to give more. because somehow in the West, I just wasn't as teaching as much as I usually do, and that's how I learned. So now I'll be teaching every day for the next 4 months. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Betty.
Betty, Haribo. Okay, Haribo. Who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Sharupa.
Wow, Haribo. Good. We'll see you also in India, Sri Rupa. That's going to be great. Who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I heard Hemalata Radha, maybe Sebastian. Who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Jai Kishori.
Hi, Bo, I got your letter. I'll get around to answering in the next few days. Okay, anybody else? Say hello.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Sri Gandhari.
Wow, Hare Krishna. Pray you can visit me sometime in Vrindavan. We give classes twice a day if you're here. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Eugenio and Gloria.
Oh, Haribo. Hare Krishna, good. I had 6 people from Colombia today, friends of Shyamsundari here. They weren't like Krishna Bhaktas necessary, but I took them all over. They loved it. Anybody else here like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Lal Govinda.
And Braja Sundari Radha, thank you so much for class, Maharaj. It was such a beautiful class, and also your contribution to Raghunath's show is really great. Thank you.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Love what you said. What did you say?
Yeah, I'm listening. It's interesting. Yeah, what were you saying?
I was going to say, thank you for that beautiful story about, I forgot his name, but Prabhupada's first disciple, that he was touched by the hand of God, is really beautiful. And you said that a seeker is not looking for truth.
Oh, Jayananda. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Was that the story about you're talking about today?
Yeah.
The story today?
Yeah, today.
Yeah.
No, today. You just said about, Hare Griva.
That was Hare Griva. Hare Griva.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It was a beautiful story. But also, what you said, a seeker's not looking for truth to control the world, but to serve the world. That was really beautiful. Thank you so much.
Well, it's nice when people share their reflections like you just did now. It's encouraging.
Thank you. Yeah,
and I was sitting there, you know, on the Raghunath show. What an experience. And then you can see all the people watching it too. And he's so much on fire when he was here. Today we went out to this place where the Brijbasi wrote these, and we did kirtan, and I was leading kirtan, and Raghunath was doing this Brijbasi dance. I couldn't even chant. It was so funny. I literally couldn't lead the kirtan. It was so funny.
He's the best.
So he's really funny, but he was on fire. I mean, when that class is he just got back from Govardhan Hill. That's walking around for 5 hours. So, and that, Brother Sid, that was my room that I gave the class.
Oh, yes.
So everybody was in my room. Okay, thank you. Good.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brajarade.
Brajarade, are you going to come soon to Vrindavan again?
Next year, Maharaj.
Okay, I'll be looking forward. We had such a nice time this time. Good. Anybody else? Okay. Well, I guess I'm at least satisfied that the technology here is working. I have no idea how it's working, but somehow it's working. And I don't even know how to get out. How do I get out of here? Okay, there it is. Okay. Well, thank you all. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.